Now, may we turn to our Bible reading, to the book of Ruth in the Old Testament, the second chapter. This is now our third meeting with Ruth and with Naomi. And we're going to read the whole of the chapter. The two women, Naomi and her foreign daughter-in-law, have returned from Moab, less their respective husbands, both of whom have died. And here they are back in Bethlehem, quite empty-handed. Ruth chapter 2. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And Naomi said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set forth and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servants, who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose maiden is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "It is the Moabite maiden, who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Pray, let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, without resting even for a moment." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field, or leave this one, but keep close to my maidens. Let your eyes be upon the field which they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to molest you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then Ruth fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord recompense you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "You are most gracious to me, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not one of your maidservants." And at mealtime Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her parched grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. And when she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening, and then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley, about 50 pounds, quite a load. And she took it up and went into the city, and she showed her mother-in-law what she had gleaned, and she also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked, and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, Blessed be he by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Naomi also said to her, The man is a relative of ours, one of our nearest kin. And Ruth the Moabitess said, Besides, he said to me, You shall keep close by my servants till they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, It is well, my daughter, that you go out with his maidens, lest in another field you be molested. So she kept close to the maidens of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law. May God help us to find much enrichment from this. Ruth chapter 2. As we enter the second chapter of this delightful book, you may recall, if you were with us last Lord's Day evening, that we do so at the beginning of the barley harvest. The final words of chapter 21, or verse 20, chapter 1, verse 22. They came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest, a most auspicious detail that we've been given because in God's goodness there was going to be more than barley that would be harvested, because there would be a romance that would be blossoming, ripening, and which would transform the sufferings of these two women. May I very briefly summarize what is happening in chapter 2, just to reacquaint ourselves with the narrative. The two women have arrived back in Bethlehem, and having hoofed it from Moab, they would know that their trials are far from over. They haven't been paying their national insurance stamp, and Peru money isn't available, and they're going to have to scratch out a living. And quite immediately, Ruth sees that she needs to go out into the fields and gather some of the pickings that would be available in the barley harvest. The field that she chooses is the field of one Boaz, a wealthy and distinguished fellow, we are told, who is in fact a near relative of Elimelech, Naomi's deceased husband. Boaz isn't present when Ruth arrives early in the morning, but he gets there, and as soon as he hears who she is, he begins to lavish his kindness upon her. He provides her with a piece for her lunch. He says to his workers, be sure she gets water. And then he says to them, don't just let her glean, but tell her to come among the sheaves, a practice that would not normally be given, a privilege not normally given to gleaners. And then more than that, he tells them, you've actually got to chuck away some of the sheaves. And her takings at the end of the day are quite considerable. And when she comes back to her mother-in-law, Naomi, and shows her what she has, Naomi's spirit rises, and she recognizes, of course, that God's hand has been upon them both. May we turn to Naomi's reaction and read it carefully. It's verse 20, and I want us just to see exactly how the old lady reacts. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, Blessed be he by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Naomi realized that in stumbling upon the field of Boaz, Ruth had been led by God to one of the few men who could rescue them both from their hardship and their heartaches. And she straight away points to the kindness of the Lord. If you've got the authorized version, you will see that she points to the loving kindness of the Lord. This is one of the very big words in the Old Testament. It's much repeated. It's a word which means loving kindness, but it's bigger than that. It also means the faithfulness of God, faithfulness to his promises, and the loyalty of God to his people. And Naomi is seeing in all that's happened that day that God, with his loving kindness, has been at work. And I want to try with you this evening to observe from the chapter three simple ways in which this loving kindness was made known and manifest to the two women. And the first one is this: the loving kindness of God through his provision for the poor and needy, his provision for those who were hard up. Woven into the law of God was a thoroughgoing concern for those who were poor. This is demonstrated to us in verse 2 of the chapter. Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean amongst the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And Ruth, and like, was aware with her mother-in-law that God had made a provision for the gleaners at the time of the harvest. I want to read to you from the book of Leviticus here, and the 19th chapter, to see how particularly God was concerned for the poor at the harvest time. Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 9. "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field to its very border, neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God." Why was it that God had made such a precise provision for the needy ones? Well, he gives a simple and straightforward reason. Simply, "I am the Lord your God." That was all that needed to be said. He was saying to his people, "It's because you have seen the loving kindness of the Lord your God. When you were poor, when you were destitute, that you in your turn must go and show that kind of loving kindness to those among you who were poor." And so it was that God gave legal protection to the gleaners. And he wasn't merely saying, "You just leave your leftovers for those who aren't as well off as yourselves." He actually was saying there must be a particular portion, a corner of your field, that will go to the hard up. Now, how are we going to apply this word for ourselves? Well, surely in this way. We have him as our God, who is loving kindness itself. We have enjoyed that lavish generosity, that superabundant grace. And even although we live in a welfare state, we must not be blind to the needs of the poor. We are, says Paul, to do good to all men, and especially to those of the household of faith. All men are to be our concern. And the practical implications of this for us are that we shall want the laws of our land to reflect the loving kindness of our God. When each of us comes to exercise our democratic rights, our voting, I do believe that amongst the many things on the agenda as we weigh up who we will vote for, one of our considerations will be these sort of questions. Is the person I'm going to vote for representing a party which makes provision for the gleaners, for the poor and the aliens amongst us? And secondly, is the person I vote for representing a party that is taking regular steps to increase the overseas aid that comes from the Treasury? And I do believe that if the Word of God is going to fashion and shape our characters, these are the kind of ways that we will want to observe it. God's loving kindness was seen in the provision that he made for the poor and needy. The second way that we see the loving kindness of God to the foreign girl is in his overruling in every detail of life. May we read verse 3 of the chapter. So Ruth set forth and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Again, if you have your authorized version with you, you'll be chuckled by the translation. Her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz. Her hap was to light on the field. Well, it was no accidental hap. It was part of God's good and gracious plan for Ruth and indeed for Boaz. And we need to stop and take notice of this, that the Lord God, our God, has an interest in every mosaic detail of our lives. We do well to think of him on the macro scale as the God and creator of the cosmos. But that must not let us be deflected from thinking of him who has a microscopic attention to the details of our lives. Do we really believe that everything
But everything that happens to us comes from his loving kindness. The tiniest details, the occasions when our cars break down and infuriate us, the occasions when we bump into the very person who can help us just by chance, the occasions when the Lord meets us at precisely the right time. Have we got the sort of vision of our God that sees him as the architect of these tiny details of our lives? In our scientific age, we've been brainwashed into thinking that all the events that happen to us are simply explained most rationally by cause and effect. This is materialism gone wild, and it blinds us from seeing that there's a God who intervenes into this world and breaks the system that we live in and tends to us with microscopic detail. He is the God of loving kindness, and he shows that loving kindness in the tiniest ways in our mundane lives. God then has loving kindness which is shown through his overruling in every detail of life. That's what Ruth found out when she just happened to stumble on the part of the field belonging to the nearest kinsman. And then thirdly, I want you to notice that the loving kindness of God is shown to the two women through the generosity of the Lord's people. May we read quite a section of the chapter to pick up how this is made clear. Verse 5. Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose maiden is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "It's the Moabite maiden who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Pray, let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, without resting even for a moment." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field, or leave this one, but keep close to my maidens." The generosity of Ruth in taking, of Boaz, in taking the girl under his wings and caring for her. He says, "Let your eyes," verse 9, "be upon the field which they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to molest you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Again, verse 14, "And at mealtime Boaz said to her, 'Come here, and eat some bread, and dip your morsel in the wine.' So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her the parched grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over." How was it that Ruth came to experience for herself the loving kindness of God? It was through the generosity of the Lord's people. I don't seem to hear people give testimonies too much about how they came to faith in Jesus Christ. It seemed to be a thing I heard a lot of a few years ago, and maybe it's just I've been out of touch with things. But there used to be a time when I was forever hearing testimonies that went something like this, and this actually bears close resemblance to one I heard from a young person in Yorkshire who'd come to faith. And it goes along these lines. The person tells how she was coming came to know the Lord after worshipping in a church over a period of several weeks. She says, I had been invited there by someone who had taken an interest in my sad life, and when I came to the church that she worshipped in, I heard many sermons, but what struck me most was that I saw how much these people worshipping together loved one another. The person giving the testimony often chips in with a word that's such a wholesome thing for preachers to hear. She says, I can't tell you a single word that was preached on any of the sermons, but I do remember one thing, and that was that these people had a care for one another. And what was so wonderful is that they began to extend that care to me as I came in amongst them. And she said, all my antagonism melted when I came into contact with that love. And that's how it so often is, that God's loving kindness is shown to people through, as they come as sometimes just as flies on the wall in a fellowship, just to observe what's going on. And they see how much the Lord's people love one another. It's by this that all men will know that we are his disciples. And we need to regularly ask ourselves, is that the impression that people have of us? By God's help, may it be true of us as a fellowship, that by this shall all people know that we are his disciples. You'll notice that in Ruth's case, she was particularly struck that the love of the brethren was extended to a foreigner. Verse 10, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, a foreigner? God was forever reminding his people, you know, that they had been strangers and sojourners in the land of Egypt, and he had gone out to them in their loneliness, and he had brought them home. And we as a church need to be especially conscious of those who come in among us. How good are we at welcoming the strangers to our church? And you know, it can be a costly thing, as some of us have discovered. There are people who come into a fellowship, may I say, who want to spurn all approaches. Some folks are very keen to remain anonymous, even prickly. I don't know what they're trying to hide from us, but we as God's people will go out and keep going out to the foreigners and the aliens and whoever comes among us, and will persevere with loving him. Why? Because God has treated us like that. When we were strangers and sojourners in this world. And we'll discover that most of the visitors whom we hold out our hands in friendship to like that will express the delight and the surprise, perhaps, that Ruth did. Me? A foreigner? And you know, when people come into the unconditional love of God, it sometimes quite takes their breath away. It's such a rare commodity in this world. And we are called to mirror the way that God has loved us. His deep, deep, unconditional love, making room at his table for anyone. Well, these are the ways in which Ruth had experienced the loving kindness of God in his provision for the poor, in his overruling in every detail of life, and in the generosity of the Lord's people. I want us, in closing the service, to go on to verse 20 and to see, to verse 10 to 12, and to see how it was that Boaz reacted to the young lady. I want us to see how he accounted for what was happening to Ruth. Let's read in from verse 11. Boaz answered Ruth, "All that you, Ruth, have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you didn't know before." And here's what I particularly want us to close with and to dwell on. He prays. He prays, "May the Lord recompense you for what you have done, and fully reward, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." This is one of the high peaks, really, of the biblical revelation. It's a wonderful verse. You could say it's in the snow line. It's so beautiful. And it's been described as a summary of the whole book of Ruth. And I just want to look at two of the things that Boaz draws out in his prayer, two of the characteristics of his God that he sees are at work in the young lady. And the first is this. He sees that God has already become her refuge. The God of Israel, under whose wings she had come to take refuge. One of the ways that you could describe a Christian is that he or she has come home to God. I'm going to read from the Psalms. "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High and who abides in the shadow of the Almighty will say to the Lord, 'My refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust.' He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and buckler. Our God provides for his people a refuge. And it's not just that he provides the refuge, but he is himself the refuge. And he's saying through Boaz, "You, Ruth, have found your way into the wings of the Lord God. You are the young chicken that has come and has found shelter under the flight feathers of your mother." And this is what God has done for all his people. He has given them an abiding resting place. We haven't got a city here. We have here no abiding city. But God has given us an eternal home. And as Augustine put it, we find no peace until we find rest in God. And I want to just ask you before I go, because there may be someone here tonight who has never really known what it is to come home to God. And I want to ask you, can this be the time in your life when you will find this resting place? Are you one of those traveling people that has never found a home, always drifting, always going on, but never really being able to put your roots down? It's a fearfully lonely existence, and I want to say to you, God is offering you a homecoming. He is the householder, and he will be your home. And just as Naomi, just as Ruth, the foreign girl, found a home in the strange land of Bethlehem, so you are invited to come home to your God. So it was that Ruth had already found a refuge in God. But the second thing that Boaz latches onto in this little prayer is that he prays for Ruth that she might experience the rewards that God gives his servant. You see, in verse 12, he prays, "The Lord recompense you for what you've done." And a full reward, the idea there is of actually a wage, a payment, a full reward be given you by the Lord. The Bible speaks on quite a few occasions about the way that God gives rewards to his servants. The Bible does not particularize in the exact ways that we can expect to be rewarded. But it simply says that the Lord is the rewarder of his people, and he is a debtor to no man. So in the Sermon on the Mount, those who give alms, and those who pray, and those who fast, will receive from the Lord their reward. And the rewards we are told to receive are not simply rewards in the world to come. Jesus instances that he will reward those who serve him in this world 100-fold, as well as in the world to come, eternal life. And so it is that the biblical revelation points to us as there being rewards for faithfulness in service. Now, in this instance, in the book of Ruth, God has singled out this Moabite girl, and he has made her a chosen instrument for his purposes. He has drafted her in, as it were, to be a vital link in the plan of salvation history that went on from Adam right through to Christ. And in taking her into his purposes, we need to note carefully that he doesn't simply use her. It's the way of the world, is it not? Especially the world of business and commerce, to use employees. But our God is a God who, when he says that he takes us that we might be chosen instruments, vessels fit for the master's use, this does not mean that he's treating us like disposable bottles. He is coming to take us, and yes, to make us useful in his sight, but always to enrich us in the process. And so it was that Boaz prayed for this girl, that she might be recompensed and rewarded, because Boaz knew that his God was a rewarding God. And it's not going to be any different for us. As we go on with him, as we seek with the strength we have and with our faltering steps to serve him with all our hearts, I'll guarantee you that you will not be the poorer. And contrary to what people and Satan may whisper in your ear, you will be not the less happy for committing yourself to him, him who has promised to be our shield and our exceeding great reward. May God bless you and enrich you as you go out into this week serving him. We close with number 414. 414, Jesus, lover of my soul. Number 414.